Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia. It's episode number 375 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag has recruiting wins for the House Divided at OU's expense. At 12:30, it was a wild championship weekend in college football, leading to a pretty interesting slate of bowl games over the next month or so. In a mere minutes, we start our cleanup of Week 13 from the NFL. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Tuesday. A lot of football to get into. Still got some cleanup on NFL Week 13. What a wild game last night. To finish that week, we're going to dig into some of the bowl games. We hit the championship game stuff, the semifinals, and a couple things on championship weekend, but we're going to dig into that a little more. And also, Trey, I forgot to ask you my Christmas question from yesterday because I drove in via 360. We're out here on 360 in the Westlake area, and I took the 360. I have multiple ways to get to work every day because I have a little bit of a trip, so I just sort of pick different ways. Yesterday, I hit 360, and it felt like Christmas time because I saw those trees. I saw a couple trees on the 360 route.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know, the famous 360 bridge, that road over by the golf course, people go out and decorate the trees. So my question to you is, what is the standard, what is the understanding for what happens later? Like, I know what happens in my yard, and I know what my HOA says about, hey, Chad, here's when we'd like you to have your stuff out of your yard, Christmas boy. What happens on those trees on 360? What's the understanding?
I think the unwritten rule with that is if you go decorate a tree, you try and go back and clean that tree up between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay.
And that which doesn't get cleaned up by the individuals, I believe the city takes care of most of the rest. But I feel like in the last few years, I've seen people going back and doing a pretty good job of cleaning up after themselves. Like, if you've gone and done that, this is your first year to do that. You saw other people doing it, either this year, last year, like, oh, that'd be something fun to go do with the family. That's fine.
Yeah.
But please do understand that if you don't go back and clean that stuff up, there's a good chance it's just going to stay there. And we don't want that.
Yeah, I've never done that on 360, but I'll enjoy looking at it. Some of them are done pretty well, especially the ones that end up looking, when I see ones like, wow, that looks dangerous to have decorated that tree.
Right, like on the edge of a cliff.
Right, I'm like, whoa.
Like just
okay.
Doing that in general, I know there's like up the hillside a little bit where the trees are a little bit safer, but for me, I've always looked at that with young kids. Like, do I want to take young kids to the side of what is essentially a highway?
Right.
Or to the edge of a cliff to decorate a cedar? Maybe when they're a little bit older. But right now, we're probably going to pass on that one.
Somebody texted, there's also a group that volunteers and comes and cleans up the trees that people don't.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, I knew there was some sort of group that did that. I assumed it was a city, but if there's a group of volunteers that's doing it, good on you for that one.
Somebody says they saw an ornament floating down Barton Creek.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, that'll happen. Littering is legal. Those people decorating those trees, quotes, should be fined on the spot. Here comes Ebenezer Scrooge on the text line.
Look.
Fine them all.
I used to be in that category of people that just begrudged the whole thing, but it is something uniquely Austin that we see this time of year. I've seen my kids enjoy it. There's an enjoyment that I get out of it now as well, much like when you're driving up 360 during wildflower season.
Mm-hmm.
You get it for a small period of time, a 2 to 3 week period, and you're really not going to see this many other places. So try to enjoy it and understand that, technically they might be litterers, but a lot of those people are going to come back and clean that up too.
I think you just gave me the idea because I've been trying to think of what could you do when you go back to clean up the tree to kind of keep a cycle of something going. Asking someone to like plant a new tree would be a little bit of work. But what if, when I go back to clean up the tree, I take a fistful of wildflower seeds with me and I just spread them out as I'm walking away? What about that?
I don't know if that works, but sure.
Blue bonnets, Indian paintbrush, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, those things already exist, so I'm not as concerned with that. I would just rather you...
make sure I clean up.
Clean the tree.
Yeah. So make
sure... maybe clean up two trees. Maybe go out there and clean up somebody else's tree, too. Pay it forward.
Oh,
and perhaps that
there
turns
you go.
Into something where we don't need volunteers 2 weeks after Christmas is over with.
There you go. Decorate one, clean two. That's the new pattern. For you 360 folks, that's what you do now. You decorate one... you clean up two trees for every one you decorate.
Yeah.
The two for one. That's what we do. Hope everybody's having a good December. It is December 7th today, and it is the 80th anniversary of Pearl Harbor today. 80th anniversary.
The
wow
moment that led to the U.S. getting into World War II, that years later Michael Bay spun to have Josh Hartnett and Ben Affleck save the day.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That is, like, in terms of historical events that you're redoing for cinema, that's one of the most egregious examples of them just flat out getting it wrong. Because Michael Bay has to go so overboard with every little special effect that he does.
Oh, yeah. Long before he ruined the Transformers, he did ruin Pearl Harbor for a lot of people. But he did bring up a great philosophical question about... If your buddy dies, or if you believe your buddy has died,
mm-hmm.
are you allowed to then date his girl? That really was the only important thing that movie provided for us, is that moment.
Who died?
Affleck, apparently.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Did he not really die?
He did not. He did not.
What, was he just hanging out on Oahu?
This is before they, like, I can't remember how they did the time frame.
Oh, I see.
It was thought that he was dead. He was not.
Mm.
And his buddy starts dating his girl.
Who was the girl? Kate Beckinsale?
Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, man.
Kate Beckinsale.
No question what's happening there.
Very few women you could put on screen where they are better looking than both Affleck and Hartnett combined.
Right.
But she was that woman, especially at that time. Not that Kate's ugly now. You know what I mean? But she was like Kate Beckinsale on that movie. But that was the question walking out where I'm like, wow. I can say I'd have principles, but if I'm hanging in Hawaii and that good-looking of a woman decides she likes me, can I really say, well, my dead buddy wouldn't want me to?
Perhaps an unpopular opinion, but having been to Hawaii 2 or 3 times now,
yeah.
I'm just going to say it. For a place that's that beautiful, the caliber of person that lives there, not as good looking as you would hope for paradise.
Okay, interesting.
See, there's a lot of spam and a lot of other not good for you stuff being consumed in Hawaii.
Kids, he doesn't mean digital spam there. He means actual food.
And I think it brings down just the overall tone, the overall fitness of the peoples of Hawaii.
Interesting. That's a theory I've not heard. But
it's a big meth problem on the islands.
Well, that island fever gets you.
Well, it's not just that, but Dog the Bounty Hunter used to get you if you were on the meth.
That's true. Yeah, it's a good point. Good point. All right, wherever you are, island or otherwise, we hope you are having a good Tuesday. Shout out to our man Tom McKay of Audio Visual Consultations. He dropped by the office right before we got started, and he's driving to an appointment right now. So shout out to Tom and AV Consultation.
Tom is incredible. He is always looking to do things for other people.
He's a very giving man, yes. He's a giver, he's a helper, he's a doer, and he's a hockey fan. All at once.
He's like Santa Claus. If Santa were slimmer, less bearded, and, you know, maybe a little bit shorter, too.
Yeah.
I imagine Santa Claus as being like a 6'5", 6'6" guy.
And if Santa
just a were, lumbering figure.
And if Santa were way more good looking, right? That's what you were going to say.
Oh, God.
Way more
Tom McKay is way better looking than Santa.
Gotta
and
be.
Tom McKay had a lot more fun in his pre-marriage days than Santa did before he shacked up with Mrs. Claus.
Oh, no doubt. Santa's always been approved.
Santa's like getting weird with the reindeer in the stable before he and Mrs. Claus found their special thing.
See, now you just went too far the other way. What are you doing?
Tom McKay, he went far in a different direction, and it sounded like a fun direction in the late 80s and 1990s.
Tom McKay is now screaming in his car, leave me out of this, Trey. What are you doing? All right, let's get you your spec set piece, and we'll go to the NFL today.
The Specs Set Piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. When it comes to savings, Specs leads the league with a larger selection at lower prices. Specs, official partner of Austin FC.
All right. Last night rounded out NFL Week 13. And one of the last things we told you was that weather was going to be a part of Monday Night Football. I was seeing mid-30s. I was seeing wind. And in Buffalo, Trey, we know that's different than mid-30s and wind here. Because you got that lake effect stuff. Oh, my God. It was one of those kind of games where Mother Nature played a role, played a huge part in the game, and in the end, New England adjusted a little bit better than Buffalo did and got a crazy 14-10 win.
So the Patriots win throwing the football literally three times.
Yep.
Which is amusing to hear about and entertaining to learn if you didn't actually have to watch the game.
Well, in a way, it does make the game go quicker because the clock runs a lot more.
It does make the game go quicker, but that was a god-awful football game to have to watch because the weather was having such an effect on teams' ability or even attempts to pass the football.
Yeah, it's one of those games where the weather can go too far into it. It's one thing to have snow when Michigan plays Ohio State, but it didn't change the ball game. It's one thing to have rain sometimes, but when it gets to that level, you are affecting the game's ability to be the game.
It's like the Fog Bowl. This is the best example to bring up when we talk about games like this. The Fog Bowl created some incredible pictures, some of the coolest pictures you've ever seen in the in football. But to actually watch the game itself was not a whole lot of fun.
No, and it was so stupid NFL history-wise that Mother Nature helped to determine to that degree whether those Bears or those Eagles advanced. Because those are some really interesting football teams, and it should have been played on a clear day.
Oh, was that a playoff game?
Well, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I'd forgotten that.
If I'm not mistaken, we could double-check that. I believe the Fog Bowl was like a second round. Was it a wild card game or the next round? I'm pretty sure it was a playoff game.
I remember watching the game, so it makes sense it would be a playoff game, but oof, that makes it that much worse.
Yeah, so last night was wild. In fact, you see the opening kick? You see the replay of the opening kick?
Yes.
I have never in my life watched an opening kick of a football game go 8 to 10 rows deep out of the back of the end zone.
Dude.
It landed like 10 rows into the seats.
Whether it was the Buffalo or the Patriots kicker, when they were kicking off in that direction, it was like a rocket.
Yeah.
Often going through the goalpost and into the stands.
Yeah, going that direction, as long as you could get the straightness basically figured out. Like, Justin Tucker could have tried 75 pretty easily going that way.
Agreed.
And again, you just have to get it right. Now, into the wind, you probably saw some of those warm-ups. And during the game, Buffalo had one. Into the wind was nuts last night.
So bad that the punters were just trying to make decent contact with the football off of their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they talked about that, I think, after the first punt, because you saw the ball move like 6 to 8 inches just from dropping it from his hands down to his foot, and he barely got a piece of the ball. I want to say it was like a 20-yard punt or something. Meanwhile, if you're punting it the other way, you can barely tap the ball, and it's flying over the return guy's head, and I think every instance rolling like at least 20 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, and then and with the wind, I mean, you could probably have a 60-yard punt by accident.
No question.
It was incredible. But Belichick played things really close to the vest, really smart, because they ended up with the wind at the very – they ended up with the wind with the wind to finish the game, which is what they needed. But, Trey, I can argue all you had to see in that game was one play, and it's the breakaway run by Harris.
True.
Because it ends up being 14-10, and that play – and you brought this up in our pre-show meeting – the fact that that was against the wind ended up being huge.
Enormous.
They got that big a play that – A, it's an explosive play. B, it's a, was it 65, 67, whatever it was? And then it goes for a touchdown. Like, all of that happening at once was silly. And that ends up, to me, being the difference. And then, obviously, those defensive stops are big. You and Isaiah, in our picks, had picked Buffalo -2.5. I had picked the Patriots +2.5, and twice in the game, it was about to swing the other way.
Yeah.
Twice I'm watching that going, oh, no, here it comes. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes, and then it looked like it had a chance to swing if they could have, obviously, because if the Bills find a touchdown there with the extra point, if they could have kicked the extra point, they could have snuck up 3 points, and then you guys would have won.
So here's the thing. I don't know if they can kick the extra point there because the wind is so bad going in that direction. They would have had to try for two.
They'd have gone for two like the Patriots did to start.
Right.
Yeah.
And that shows just how difficult it was even getting the ball near that end zone as Buffalo got there twice in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in both instances, well, I guess in one instance there was a penalty that pushed them back to where they – couldn't go for it on fourth down. They had to try a field goal.
Right.
The field goal.
And that's the one that got pushed.
Gets shanked. Went to the right. Yeah. Understandably shanked. And then the next time they get down there, the refs missed a call. They missed an offsides by the Patriots, I think. We never got that down-the-line replay, but it looked like the guy was in the neutral zone at that point.
I agree.
And it kind of seemed like everybody on the field, including Patriots guys, felt like there was an offsides there that needed to be called. I'm not sure why they didn't call that. I know that's not a reviewable play, but that might have ended up as the difference in the game.
Yeah, Patriots kind of take advantage of that. By the way, it was 64 yards for Damian Harris. I'll argue that's the biggest play of the game. I know that's what made it 8-0, but A, that you scored a touchdown, then the fact that you got the two-point conversion to have that extra point, if you will, throughout the game. And think about it. That makes it 14-10, even if Buffalo had been able to figure out a field goal. It wasn't going to be able to tie that game. So there's just all these little ingredients, and now it is official. Going into last night, the Patriots by a tiebreaker were the number one seed. Well, guess what? Now they're 9-4. They are the number one seed in the AFC. That man is still a badass football coach. That defense is coming together. And I have been on the bandwagon for the – not bandwagon, but in the discussion the last few weeks of I think they're finding something. Watch out for this team. A lot of people aren't believing it, just like they're not believing that the Chiefs are finding something. But Trey, that's a tough out right now. 9-4. You'll have to go to Foxborough at this point. They'll get the bye at this point, the one bye in the AFC. I mean, that is a dangerous group. Mac Jones does not look like a rookie. And that defense is just getting better and better and making more plays and doing better. By the way, former Longhorn, right?
Adrian Phillips.
Adrian Phillips, one of the huge plays in that game.
Yeah, Adrian Phillips, who I think played his final year at Miami, was with the Chargers for a while, was making Pro Bowls with the Chargers as a special teams guy, has turned into a really good safety over time.
Yeah, those are the kind of games I can handle every once in a while. Don't want my team in one of those games, but every once in a while you can give me a crazy weather game. You're right that it went too far, but it also just... Nobody wants to hear these kind of things when it's about Saban and Belichick. But when they get showcased like that, I think we all just have to stand back and give them the slow clap and give them the in-awe moment because he's Belichick. They threw the ball three times. Last time an NFL team threw the ball that few times was the year I was born, 1974.
Wow.
In that season, somebody, I don't know who it was, I saw it in a story today, I didn't write the team down, somebody attempted three passes. And Mac Jones, after the game, just said, well, if you score more points, you win, right? That's the whole idea. Oh, big smile on his face. And I thought, there it is. Saban guy becomes a Belichick guy. Mac Jones is just cementing himself with this Patriots organization.
Maybe so. But watching him operate last night, it looks pretty clear to me that Mac Jones does not like playing in the cold. And that could be a problem,
especially
with the home field advantage come January. We've seen some nasty elements that the Patriots are hosting playoff games in. Obviously, the Tuck rule is probably the first game that comes to mind for people. Mac Jones will have to throw the football at some point in really cold weather. Let's see how comfortable he is when he does so.
That's a good point. Good point. Week 13 wrapped up last night with that game, and there was a lot of stuff. Yesterday we got into the Cardinals and Bucks both getting big wins and staying. For the Bucks, it's 9 wins. The Cardinals are the first team to get to 10 wins this year, and I heard a breakdown last night. Somebody was talking about the NFC, and think about it, Trey. They're on top. Kingsbury and Kyler Murray are on top of the NFC, but right below them are some big dog history guys. Right below them are two of the better quarterbacks you've ever seen in your life, Brady and Rodgers, just lurking. And you've got a young stud coach with the Rams that you can't forget about. They're not the most consistent team in the NFC, but they're in the discussion of like, oh, God, what is that, right? And then you've got the Dallas Cowboys, who, if it comes together, are a hell of a weapon. And that's all underneath Carolina, all underneath Arizona, with these young coach, young quarterback, trying to deal with all of that.
Yeah, the most intriguing storylines in the league this year are mostly on the NFC side of things. Obviously, Kansas City has started to get it together once again, built ironically on a foundation of great defense, with the offense still trying to find its way. The AFC North, which normally provides a team, at least one team with intrigue, maybe Cincinnati, but otherwise Baltimore doesn't do much for you. Pittsburgh has found their way back into the playoff hunt, unfortunately for most of us, who would have to watch that team lumber through a postseason game. The Browns are the Browns once again. The AFC South, Indianapolis is interesting, I guess, because of Jonathan Taylor, but how much faith do you have in that team with Carson Wentz as their quarterback? He's eventually going to go the way of Carson Wentz throughout the course of a football game. The Titans, I love the Titans story before half their freaking offense went down with injury.
But if you know who comes back,
it becomes intriguing again if Derrick Henry comes back and A.J. Brown comes back in the next couple of weeks, healthy once again.
Especially if they've held together and they're like the two or three seed.
Yeah, with Julio Jones eligible to come off the IR this week, I believe. So slowly they may become one of those teams once again, but just across the league right now, it's a lot of disappointment on the AFC side with some NFC teams that are certainly flawed, don't get me wrong, but do you have a handful that look like legitimate contenders.
Talking some NFL today, Cowboys, of course, getting ready for the first matchup with Washington this week. Noon kick, Cowboys at Washington. So an 11 a.m. pregame for you. Remember, we bring you all the Cowboys games right here on the Horn. So 11 a.m. pregame this coming Sunday. Also coming up, it's the bowl season. Let's talk some championship weekend and what happened. We hit the very tip top of it yesterday, but we'll get into some of those other games and kind of go back over what happened over the weekend and the bowl games that have been set up. We'll talk about the teams in the state of Texas and where they'll be playing bowls. Also teams in the Big 12 and where they will go bowling. There's some cool matchups that have been set up. Also before the end of the hour, we'll dig into recruiting in the crap bag because each side of the house divided in the last few days has taken advantage of the Oklahoma situation. We'll get you all that. Plus at 105, Jeff Ward of the Jeff Ward Show joins us like he does each and every Tuesday. That is all coming up on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Yeah, Spider-Man and Freeze in full effect.
You ready, Ron?
I'm ready.
You ready, dude?
I'm ready, Slick. Are you?
Oh, yeah. Take it down.
Girl, I must warn you. I sense something strange in my mind.
Yo.
Situation is
serious.
Let's cure it, cause we're running out of time.
Tell them, Rick.
It's all so
beautiful.
Relationships, they seem.
Here comes the show off vocal. These dudes were talented. New Edition guys. Here comes. This is where they're like, in case you don't know, we can't say. Here we go. Right here.
It's driving me out of my mind.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's hard for me to find.
Fantastic. Oh, never trust a big butt and a smile. Poisoned by BBD. Right? Belle Biv DeVoe?
Correct.
Yeah.
Shameless podcast promotion Tuesday, Chad. The key word here is poison. My guest is Barto Elmore. His new book is called Seed Money, Monsanto's Past and Our Food Future. Monsanto has poisoned a lot of places and a lot of people in this country. In its 100-plus year history, find out how at booksonpod.com.
All right, there you go. Starting off with a little Belle Biv DeVoe. I remember when that thing took over. That video was on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. We'll start out with some football talk. We'll continue with more football talk on the college side of things coming up. Remember, hornfm.com. If you miss anything, if you miss any of the shows, all of it's podcasted there. Yesterday, we separated the RBKD discussion about Quinn Ewers, about the new NIL deal that the Longhorns have going on. You can go back and check out our third hour yesterday because we interviewed the co-founder of the Horns with Heart campaign that is going to be connecting the community with scholarship players, and they're starting with this offensive line initiative called the Pancake Factory. That's in our third hour yesterday. Also, if you didn't hear the discussion about the woman breastfeeding a cat on an airplane, it's in there too. Go to the Shirts and Skins page. You know you want to. It is a creepy picture I found of a hairless cat. They're just creepy.
Such a thing as a non-creepy picture of a hairless cat?
I couldn't find one. I did find one. I'm sorry. I found one of a, it appeared to be like a newborn kitten version of that cat. That was cute.
Was it?
It was cute. Kittens are cute to me, even when they don't have hair.
Okay.
Little wrinkly. It was like a little Shar-Pei. Like a little Shar-Pei puppy looking thing.
Yeah, because even puppies look ugly straight out of the womb.
But there are some spooky pictures of those hairless cats. Just go, if you Google hairless cat, some of the pictures that come up are fascinating.
That's scary.
The eyes, the face, the wrinkles, how the wrinkles are placed on the animal and just how that makes them look freakier. That's a weird looking creature.
Yeah, it looks like a creature that belongs in a post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah. Because I love cats, specifically the big cats. I respect cats, beautiful. I love black cats, the whole thing. Panthers, tigers, but the fur is important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I look at a hairless cat, same thing with a hairless dog. There are dogs that don't have hair. And when I see them, I think, no. I need hair on that animal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need you to be totally, completely like all the way to the skin bald. That's weird. That's strange.
Yeah, the hypoallergenic dogs, thankfully, I think there is a breed that is either has really short hair or no hair. Most of those dogs have a fur that just doesn't shed.
Right. There's all kinds of dogs that have that hypoallergenic thing going on. You can find those, and then you don't have to worry about getting a hairless dog. That would be crazy. All right, so we hit a little NFL to start the show. Remember Jeff Ward coming up at 105. We'll get into some football talk with him. 6 minutes of football podcast and the Jeff Ward Show live each weekday. But we wanted to get into some college discussion as well. Yesterday, Trey, we hit a little bit of Championship Saturday. We kind of hit the top of things. We talked about Bama beating Georgia. I'm still so disappointed in that Georgia defense.
Mm.
I mean, I know the schedule, and I know they're in the SEC East and all that, but they were supposed to be different. They were supposed to be badasses. They were supposed to be so good that the people in Athens could feel like, you know what, we're going to take Bama out of this, and we are the team to beat now in the playoff. But they've just added tons of questions now around that team.
You had your chance to put your foot on their throats.
Yeah.
And now you hope to get to do, or I guess you hope Cincinnati wins that game, but you hope to have another opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
In the championship.
That's all you can hope for at this point. Georgia's got to get by Michigan. That matchup was set because Michigan destroyed Iowa like they were supposed to. Really good performance from them. Only 24 pass attempts from McNamara. That's probably right around where they want to keep it. That's a game, Trey, Georgia and Michigan. I'm going to keep track as I watch that game of attempts by the quarterbacks, passing attempts. Neither team wants it to get to 30.
No.
If one quarterback throws 30 balls in that game, I think they're losing it. They need to keep that thing around 20, 25, right in that area where they had McNamara. You don't need to be throwing 30 times in that game.
Which team do you think is more capable of throwing the football if need be? It's probably Georgia, right?
I think it's Georgia with that tight end.
Yeah.
Georgia with
Bowers.
Bowers, yeah.
He's really only a freshman.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, my goodness.
He's a true freshman.
That kid is a freak.
He is. He's kind of an old school way to open up a new school offense, but he's the way that Todd Monken has looked dynamic this year. He's got that kid going everywhere.
Well, that's all they had at a certain point on Saturday. The only way they were picking up yardage is by throwing it to him.
Yeah, the difference in that game might be that I like Michigan's receivers better than I like Georgia's receivers.
Yeah, Michigan, for what they've been these last few years, they have some little guys who can really break away.
Yeah.
And we've seen that on display these last few weeks against Ohio State and then Iowa.
And then the thing I love about what Harbaugh is doing is you can tell they're tied together. You can tell their culture is finally taking hold. They've got the physicality. They got the nastiness, but they will take their shots.
Mm-hmm.
And this game is also about that. It's about, to me, how many total passes do you attempt? Because you don't need too many, but then when do you take your shot? You got to do it. Will Georgia or Michigan be the team that really takes the chance? They're going to be in great weather in Miami. Who takes the big opportunities and gets them? Like that Michigan pass that went right down to the 2-yard line against Ohio State. That, to me, was one of the biggest plays of the game because it took guts to make the call right then. Who makes those kind of calls on 3rd and 6, 4th and 2, 3rd and 9? That's a big part of that game.
Whichever team makes plays in the passing game will win this game because both teams have really good defensive lines. So that yardage between the tackles or whether you're stretching it outside is not going to be as there for you as it has been much of the season.
Yeah, dude. Davis on one side and Hutchinson on the other, defensive line-wise. Yeah. They're so much fun to watch. Hutchinson's a beast, and we already knew Davis was a monster. That is so much fun. Those two guys affecting things from the defensive front, it's going to be fun to watch.
I know Michigan fans are excited because Hutchinson will be in New York for the Heisman ceremony, one of four finalists that was announced yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been more underwhelmed by a slate of Heisman candidates than by this year's?
I'm so underwhelmed I don't even know the full list. Did you say Hutchinson's one of them?
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did they pick Davis too? Because they both should go.
No.
By that argument.
No.
See, that's silliness.
The quarterback for Pitt made it.
Hutchinson's not a better D lineman than Davis is. So if you're going to take...
He's the face of the defense, though, so that's why he gets the
nod. He's the face of the defense, and Davis doesn't have
massive
numbers.
He's the guy that
does
all the interviews.
Okay, so it's Hutchinson, Stroud, Young, and there's another quarterback.
And the kid from Pitt.
Oh, and Pickett.
Pickett, yeah.
Wow.
I wonder if that fake slide got him the trip to New York.
It's on the highlight reel now.
Hell yes, it is.
You have to have just ask Vince Young. You have to have certain highlights, and you have to have big highlights to win the Heisman.
That's his pump fake in the Oklahoma State game.
Yep, and that's why, and because Reggie Bush had more of those, I'll always argue, because there were closer games and he had more of those moments, that's why he beat Vince out for the Heisman. I would have voted for Vince, but...
Yeah. Vince was freaky, but sometimes watching Vince make big plays didn't look as freaky as it did when Reggie Bush was making plays.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, the highlight factor was key. Pickett went 20 of 33 for 253 and two touchdowns in their win over Wake. They won easily 45-21. Nice win for Pitt, and they end up in a pretty good bowl game for theirs. They end up in a New Year's Six as a conference champion. So congrats to Pitt for getting that done and Pickett. So, yeah, this is Young's Heisman, right? I mean, he's going to roll this thing.
I guess so. If there was ever a year to say, you know what, none of you were good enough to win the Heisman Trophy, it would be this year. But I think Bryce Young probably wins it by default because he did look so good in the SEC championship game. He's put up great numbers all year. His first year as a starter, obviously, and there isn't that other obvious guy. It may have been C.J. Stroud if they could have beaten Michigan and won another Big Ten championship. I think C.J. probably would have gotten the nod, but because he didn't, it should be Bryce Young's to lose.
So yesterday I asked you about if Oklahoma State had gotten that yard and who would have been left out. So today I'm going to ask, what if Baylor...
I still think Oklahoma State would have been left out.
Would have been left out. I do too. Yeah. Do you think if Baylor had won like they did but hadn't lost to TCU, would Baylor have still been the team left out? Would the Big 12 champion still been left out? One loss Baylor at that point, squeaking by. Let's say the game ended the same way. Squeak by, make a defensive play. Would they still be out and Cincinnati gets in?
Boy, that's a great question.
Because I don't think Baylor would get any kind of respect from a committee.
Nah, Baylor doesn't get that respect. If it were an Oklahoma or a Texas in the same situation, they would get in over Cincinnati, but Baylor doesn't.
Yeah, I'm glad Cincinnati got in. I mean, that's cool. I think it's...
I mean, they've deserved it versus the other teams right there. They've deserved it over Georgia, by the way. People might be upset by that take, but who else did Georgia beat this year? I mean, who did they really beat this year?
Yeah, no, I'll pull...
When it boils down to it. Because that Clemson win isn't that impressive now.
Yeah, I'll pull it up here, but man...
I think Kentucky is like their best win on the season.
I have talked about it for so many years of the way you can hide yourself in the bad side of a good conference.
Yeah.
But here's what they...
Because even Florida wasn't good this year. They had to fire Mullen at the end of this, or before the end of the season.
When they beat Clemson, they were 3 in the country. Beat them 10-3 in that ugly game.
Right.
Then it was UAB, South Carolina, Vanderbilt... Then Arkansas was 8 in the country when they beat them. Beat them 37-0.
Yeah, but wasn't that also a game where Jefferson was either seriously hindered by an injury or he missed it altogether?
That's possible. Yeah, you're right. That might be right. That does sound somewhat familiar. At Auburn, they were 18 in the country at the time. Beat them by 24.
Auburn, who ended up unranked when they almost knocked Alabama off at the end of the season.
See, that day, I would have told you that was a big win. There's a rival aspect to that game, oldest rivalry thing. And I thought at that time, Auburn's a pretty good team. By the end of the year, and also that's Auburn with Bo Nix.
That is true.
Right?
That's fair. That's probably their best win on the year, like just taking everything into account.
Kentucky really wasn't the 11th team in the country, but somebody had to be. But that's what they were when they beat Kentucky. So technically, at this point, they've beaten four different ranked teams. Then they beat Florida unranked, Missouri, Tennessee, Charleston Southern, pillow, and then Georgia Tech, because that's their rival game and it's an easy one now. 45-0 was the final there. So all of that put together, though, but Trey, the way they had stepped on people, the way they had dominated, they were supposed to take that transitional step. They were supposed to take that thing. So to me, I don't think we can spend too much time on the SEC East, and it was their schedule, whatever. The way it works in the real league that takes care of a playoff system, the NFL, is I don't care if your division sucks. You go play in a playoff and prove you're good. Prove you're better. Prove you're awesome.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to hear any Georgia fans. Georgia fans, we don't need any extra excuses like years ago when it was, we didn't want to play Texas because whatever. No more excuses to that stuff. You need to be ready to go, and you need to be ready to show us that your defense can hang with anybody. That's what college football is about.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of your conference. Oklahoma fans will tell you. It's get out of your conference, but then you have to be able to get something that will go elite level.
Right.
And only Bama and Clemson have been able to really grab a hold of it these last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And the taste of LSU, and there's Ohio State here and there. But that's what Georgia's got to prove they can do now. Can they come back around, beat Michigan, and then maybe go have to beat Bama again? Or maybe it's Georgia-Cincinnati in the final. Wouldn't that be a crazy turn of events? All right, coming up, in your crap bag, both sides of the House divided. Take advantage of the Oklahoma situation. And then at 105, it's Jeff Ward of the Jeff Ward Show and 6 Minutes of Football podcast with his weekly thoughts on Texas and bowl games and championship weekend and everything else. I'm sure some coaching stuff, too. On the horn.
Shirts and skins.
We both lie silently still in the dead of the night. Though we both lie close together, we feel miles apart inside. Was it something I said or something I did? Did my words not come out right? Though I tried not to hurt you, though I tried. But I guess that's why they say every rose has its thorn. Just like every night has its dawn, just like every cowboy sings a sad song. Every rose.
Oh yeah,
has
it does, Brett Michaels. Come on, yeah, it does. The key word is poison. Otherwise, Trey would never be playing Poison. My wife, if she's listening, appreciates it. All the hair metal fans appreciate it, Trey. Why are you going with Every Rose?
Because, Chad, there's a new episode of Books on Pod out as of this morning with Bartow Elmore. His new book is called Seed Money. It's all about the sordid history of Monsanto, one of the most nefarious companies to ever operate in the U.S. Find out why by listening to our excellent chat at booksonpod.com.
Probably fitting you're playing this. Later we'll get to the fact that it's National Cotton Candy Day. There is a cotton candy quality to Poison in certain ways. Not that cotton candy's bad, but we know that it's bad for you in large quantities.
I actually think it's overrated.
I wouldn't
as a treat.
And I do too. I wouldn't listen to Poison all day, every day, and base your whole life around it. But there are times when Poison is weirdly what you kind of need. And Every Rose Has Its Thorn does hold up pretty well for what it is. For the hair band ballad that it is.
Is that their best song?
Probably. I mean, I could get a little nerdy with you and try to go other places, but it's, I mean, I guess Something to Believe In is in the discussion and then the two dirty songs, but, or what's the one about, you know, working hard and but nothing but a good time, maybe. Okay. It's probably Every Rose, though.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you what. watching like an entire sea of like women in their 40s and 50s now. And I watched them back in their teens, back when it was happening the first time, watching them react when he starts singing that song.
Right.
It is hard to describe, Dre. Mm-hmm. That is a magical little moment for Mr. Brett Michaels. He can still pull that off. All right, more Poison stuff coming from Trey. Check out booksonpod.com for all the great podcasts. Let's get into the crap bag here, and we'll talk some positive recruiting in the House Divided.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. And by positive recruiting in the House Divided, obviously I don't mean between the two schools. They do nothing but say bad things about each other. What I mean is each side of the House Divided just took advantage of the Oklahoma situation. On the Aggie side of things, it's a defensive tackle, a five-star named Gabe Brownlow Dindy, which is a very interesting name. He's the number 4 overall prospect in the class coming up. He was an OU verbal, so now the Aggies have gathered, depending on who you're asking, as many as 3 5-stars in their class. They have this is their 6th commit since November, so Jimbo Fisher is building a class that some people think is going to be like 1 or 2 in the country. Texas is also building a class that is top 10, and over the weekend, Trey, Texas took advantage of an Oklahoma issue, a decommit from OU back on November 28th, became a Longhorn, Kobe McKenzie, the linebacker out of Lubbock. Apparently all he needed to do was get to Austin, because he did, and he hung out with coaches, and he hung out with players, and he talked to people and asked some questions, and actually at one point I think he said, no questions required, no questions needed, every question was answered, all he had to do was get here. So Kobe McKenzie, going to be a Longhorn, and then I have to look at the name because I haven't memorized this one yet, Gabe Brownlow Dindy, GBD, I guess. In a CBD world, he'll be GBD.
No,
probably.
You're right.
Yeah, Gabe Brownlow Dindy will apparently be an Aggie. There are still a few other, couple other names out there of Oklahoma decommits to look out for, but House Divided taking advantage there, and of course the early signing period coming up here very quickly in just a couple of weeks. So wanted to point that out. Also, I realized, while I have a minute here, I still haven't asked you about Bob Saget. How did Friday night go at the Paramount?
Oh, Friday night was good. Saget was hilarious. The crowd was champing at the bit to show him love. As you heard in the interview last week, he can go all over the map very quickly, and that happened at times during his stand-up to the point where it was hard to follow him at times. It wasn't often, but a few times it was kind of hard to follow him. Then he ended like he said he would with some music, pulled out the acoustic guitar, played some parody songs.
Now that I don't know if I've ever heard. Is that any good when he does that?
That's not my favorite style of comedy, but he did a good version of it.
Okay.
And overall it was a great time. My buddy Mark and I went. And the Paramount is obviously a great place to see just about any show. I've never seen any live music there, but I can imagine with that. Seen a ton of stand-up, seen some movies too. Kind of wish they would invest in more comfortable seating. I mean, that seating...
Got the old school seats.
Might have been there around the turn of the last century.
Those are the seats I sat in back in, whatever, 90 or 2000 when I saw George Carlin. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Same seats.
When Abe Lincoln was doing a tour through the Deep South back in the mid-1800s, I think Mary Todd sat in one of those seats.
Those were the seats,
but
yes.
We should be very thankful we have a place like the Paramount to go check out live stuff.
Dude, I can't imagine what a concert would be like there. I bet it'd be great. Do they still do musical shows there? Or is it all performance type stuff?
No, I think they do musical shows,
really?
Because Bruce and Kelly are doing their Christmas time deal there this year.
Oh, my God. I got to go see that before I leave this earth.
I'm honestly surprised you haven't
yet. I am,
too. You're such big fans of them both.
I adore them, and I love the idea of them doing anything, but I've never been to the Christmas special there. That's right. I forget that's where they've done that. I think they may have moved that around a little bit, but I know they've done that there at some point. Glad that show went well. If you haven't heard the Trey interview with Bob Saget, check out booksonpod.com for that. The full unedited version, including the Bob Saget answer to the Dave Coulier question that answered a lot of questions for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I now understand better. And after watching the Alanis Morissette documentary, I get A, I believe what Bob Saget says, and B, I get why Alanis Morissette didn't say anything.
Because she didn't want to create more speculation with who the other two are? Because
the truth doesn't add to any legend. The truth isn't rock and roll. The truth doesn't really speak to rock and roll. The truth and a rock and roll truth would be it's one guy. Like what's going on right now with Taylor Swift and her fans, and they know it's that guy. They know that that stuff's about Jake Gyllenhaal and that stuff's about John Mayer, and she's that honest to put it out there. But in this case, if what he said is true, which I kind of think it might be, if it really is a conglomeration of three different guys, well, that's not rock and roll. I mean, that's not the rock and roll way to tell that story. Hey, this is three different guys and I wrote one song. No. Nobody hears You Ought to Know and thinks of three different guys. You're thinking of one person sitting at a table with the wife that in your mind is terrible for him. That's what you're thinking of.
Well, unless the second and third guys are like Jim Carrey and Captain Kangaroo or something. Like, what if it's Captain Kangaroo that's the guy that's in the theater with her?
I don't think she ever dated Captain Kangaroo.
I mean, sure, you can say that.
He was way too old.
Perhaps we can get some urban legends going here.
Now, Jim Carrey's different. Did she date Jim? Was she ever with Jim Carrey?
No, I mentioned Jim Carrey's name because I asked Saget about whether or not he owns one of Rodney Dangerfield's old cannabis pipes.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Rodney's wife had given to him after his death, and he said, yeah, a couple of us got some of his merch. I guess Jim Carrey got one of his smoking devices.
That makes sense.
Saget got a pipe.
That's cool.
Some other people probably got some other stuff.
Check that full interview out at booksonpod.com. Also tonight, check out the Longhorn Blitz podcast. As soon as RBKD is done, Rod, Jeff Howe, Matt Butler talking Longhorn football and recruiting and all the things coming up with the early signing period. And then for you high school fans, don't forget Under the Lights tomorrow night at 7 with Rick Epstein and Jeff Powers. Also tomorrow at 8, you got Fight Night with Eddie and Jordan. They're getting ready for another big UFC event. And at 9 tomorrow night, it is Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, because the pro wrestling world never stops and there's always something to talk about. Stu and Justin will get that taken care of tomorrow night. But again, tonight you've got RBKD when we're done, and then 7 o'clock it is the Longhorn Blitz podcast. All right, coming up, it is Jeff Ward. We talk to him every Tuesday, get his thoughts on some of these coaching moves. What about the Oregon job? Who should fill that role? And Texas in recruiting as we get ready for signing day. Jeff Ward coming up on the Horn.